Hi, I'm Tracy Ricks Foster, and welcome to Off the Wall with Tracy Ricks Foster. Thank you so much for tuning in today. This is part three of the series, So You Want to Be a Writer. I hope that you're ready, and we're about to have some fun. And I want you to know that whenever I create a podcast and I'm into doing my thing, I am imagining that I'm talking to you. I am visualizing that I'm speaking directly to you, and that's why you may hear me giggle or laugh, or I'm joking or say something funny or making some type of reference, because I am speaking to you as a friend. And as a friend, I come to you with no pretension. This is who I am. I have a take it or leave it type of personality, and basically people like it. So I want you to know this, because when I speak to you, I'm speaking to you with honesty and love and transparency. This is who I am. I love writing. I love books. I just love the language. I just love it all. I'm not just a writer. I am a journalist. I'm a published author. What else can I say? I have been a professional book reviewer for over 20 years. I am an editor. I just love all things books. I can't help it. When I dream at night, sometimes I dream about books. So I am very much immersed in this world, and what I'm saying to you is from experience, and also from speaking to and just really delving into the world of being and becoming a writer. So the advice that I give, it's not advice that I'm giving for because it's just something to do. Writing is a love and it's a passion for me. And I want everyone who believes that they have a story within them that they want to tell. I don't want you, that person, to feel as if you will never be able to tell it. I want you to know that there is a way that you can get this out. If you want to, if you don't feel that much confidence within yourself, I want to help bring that out in you. And if we go through this series and you say, I still cannot do this, I want to help you be able to find yourself someone who will help you further so that you can tell your story. That's what's important about language and communication as far as it's concerned, as far as human communication and the beauty of it, and why it's important that we put down our stories. The reason why we need to tell our stories, because it's part of our human experience. It's something that we leave behind as our legacy and a way for others in the future to know what we were thinking, what our journey consisted of as we walk this path of life. So, welcome to part three of the series. Part three of this series, we're going to discuss how to develop a strong character. Hopefully you were able to listen to part one and part two of So You Want to Be a Writer. If you haven't, I welcome you to this part, this portion of the series, and hopefully after you finish this series, this part three, you will go back and pick up some of the gems that I offered in parts one and two of So You Want to Be a Writer. All right, let's get to it. So where does character, a good strong character, come from? Does it just come from your imagination? Does it come from interactions that you may have with people in your daily life? Did you dream it? So many questions comes into play when you think about the question of how does a strong character develop? And I want to say this, strong character development does not just happen. It's something that writers create. It's a gift, it's a craft, but there are technical aspects to it. So how do you develop a strong character? Where does that come from? It comes from your experiences. It comes from your interactions with people every day. It comes from your humanity and the humanity of others. Because when you're working in the world of fiction, the characters that you are, whether they be inanimate or animate, there's a reason for them to be in the place or the position that you have put them in for your story. So whether your main character is a house, an animal, or a human being, they all should feature some main foundational building blocks. As we discussed in part two of So You Want to Be a Writer, we discussed that each book should feature a when, what, why, where, and how. And your characters, especially your central characters, they should all have the same thing. What is that? They should all answer the questions of what, when, why, where, and how. If your characters, especially your central characters, do not possess the answers to those immediate questions that a reader will have within the first few paragraphs of your story, then you've lost your reader. You've lost the investment that your reader wanted to place within your story. Because see, there's a motivation behind everything. And your character's motivation should be noticeable. I shouldn't have to, or your reader shouldn't have to wait until chapter 5 to figure out why your character feels the way they do, why they are operating in why are they functioning in the manner that they are. Did something happen to them as a child? Are they breaking up in their marriage, or there's some relationship? What happened? Why are they doing the things that they do? And basically, this is a central piece of human psychology that we sometimes fail to hone in on in our reactions and our daily reactions with other people. But You cannot fail to place this within your story. Now, you may fail to do this in your real life, which is figure out what people's motivations are and understand why a person acts or reacts the way they do. However, you cannot do that when you are a writer. When you are telling a story, especially one that's a fictitious story, we need to know. We want to know why Priscilla is behaving in the manner that she does or that she has. We want to know what places Priscilla or Ethan or John or Sarah. We want to know why she is where she is. Who is this person? How did they arrive at this point? That you are opening the story and that I am reading. We want to know, who is this person? What makes them tick? What motivates them? How are their lives central to this story? How will it affect other characters? What makes them tick? Why should I invest in them? All of these things, where are they? When are they? These are central building blocks that each story has and that each central character and other characters need to have as well, so that we can invest in them, so that we can love them, so that we can embrace them, so that we can relate to them, so that we can love to hate them. We want to be able to do this. Now, I'm going to be pulling from several books as an example, and I would like for you, if you haven't already, you know, purchased them, I want you to go ahead and do that. And the first of those books will be a book called, a book titled Gone with the Wind. Now, you may say to yourself, why are we discussing, or why would Tracy come up and discuss Gone with the Wind, especially at this time point in 2020, where we're really focusing on Black Lives Matter? And the reason I feel like this is because Gone with the Wind is an excellent, excellent book. It's structured in such a way that is teachable, and that you, as a person who wants to become a writer or an aspiring writer or curious writer, you should be able to pick up Gone with the Wind, and you should be able to read it not just as a reader, but as a writer as well, because you will be able to see some of the things that I see when I read Gone with the Wind. And some of those principles within this book are classic principles that will be able to help you become a better and a stronger writer. And in character development, what we have of, let me just go back and do this. Gone with the Wind was written by Margaret Mitchell. So please, if you can download it, do that. If you can, I don't believe that it's on YouTube as an audiobook, but you can most definitely pick that book up. I know you may say, well, you know, it's about race, it's one-sided and lopsided, it's all those things. However, the book is written from the vision of Margaret Mitchell. What is her background? Margaret Mitchell is a child of the post-Civil War. So her family members, her parents, her grandparents, they were touched by the Civil War directly. So she is telling a story from her point of view. It's fictitious, yet still some of those stories have a basis, a foundation in the discussions and conversations that she has heard or overheard as a child and coming up in the South during the post-Civil War era. So there's still a lot about this book that we can glean about the perspectives of white Southerners about their way of life. And yes, there are some portions that, you know, as a African-American woman, that I can see where some may say, I don't want to read this book, I just feel that it's wrong. But let me open something to you. When you are a writer, you're not opening the door or opening the doors of another. Well, let me just say it like this. As a writer, you have not only opened the window of your imagination and the window of your eyes and your heart to the world, you're also opening a door for other people to understand how you think and how perhaps a certain segment of humanity thinks. And there is a certain segment of humanity that believes in the foundations of white supremacy and racism in this country. And reading Gone with the Wind as a black person doesn't make you support white supremacy. What it should do on that note is give you an understanding of why people feel the way they feel. Understanding is an acceptance. Understanding doesn't mean I'm co-signing something. Understanding means that my eyes of perception are open and I am receiving certain pieces of information or knowledge that I can use for the betterment of my life, my family, and any type of activity or activism I may want to engage in. So when I say that one of the textbooks that we're going to use for this series will be Gone with the Wind, I'm using it as an example, as a classic piece of literature that we can not only get an open eye view of what white supremacy is and how it's perceived by some. I'm also opening you up to a world where there is some magnificent writing going on here. And what you should be focusing on is the writing and what you can glean from it. All right, there's my disclaimer. So, on to Gone with the Wind. If you have seen the movie, that's fantastic. If you have read the book, that is even more spectacular. If you haven't read the book, I would encourage you to do so. Now, if you have seen the movie Gone with the Wind, you know that there are four central characters in this story. There is Scarlett O'Hara, Scarlett O'Hara, Hamilton, Kennedy, Butler. There is Rhett Butler. There is Ashley Wilkes. And also Melanie Hamilton Wilkes. Those are the four central characters in Gone with the Wind. But there's one important character that doesn't get the play that it should. And who is that character? The character is the Old South, pre-Civil War South. That the pre-Civil War South is one of the most central characters in the story Gone with the Wind. Because remember, your characters can be animate objects and they can be inanimate objects. That's why we have to include the South itself as a major player in this story. One of the five characters. Now, what makes the characters of Scarlett, Rhett, Ashley, and Melanie, plus the South, the Old South, as it's portrayed in Gone with the Wind, what makes their characters so strong? What makes Margaret Mitchell's artistry of character development so noteworthy? What makes Margaret Mitchell a master at character development? Well, the first thing we need to note about the main character, which is Scarlett O'Hara, because the book is predominantly about her and her life. The world is seen through the eyes of the character of Scarlett O'Hara. But what makes her such a strong character? What makes Scarlett O'Hara, Hamilton, Kennedy, Butler such a strong character in Gone with the Wind? It's the way Margaret Mitchell paints who she is within the first few paragraphs of Gone with the Wind. What she does, Margaret Mitchell, is she describes Scarlett O'Hara as not being the cutest belle in Georgia. In fact, Scarlett is probably an average looking young lady. She's not beautiful. She has certain facial features that are flaws. She is not what you would call a model or the greatest looking young woman in the world or in the county or in the state of Georgia at that time. However, as Margaret Mitchell hips us to that deal, we see, or we can envision or visualize, the fact that Scarlett is sitting on the steps of her home and there are two young men, the Tarleton twins, who are vying for her attention and her affections. How is Scarlett able to pull this off? And as we go through the book, we realize that this young lady, who is not the prettiest thing in Georgia, who is average looking, how is she able to pull so many suitors, so many men? Men just flock to her. Men of all ages are flocking to this girl. What is it about her that makes her stand out from the rest? What is it about Scarlett O'Hara that puts her at the head of the class and makes her the envy of her peers? Why is this? And how is it that this woman, who is the star of many young men's dreams, how is it that she is not able to snag the one man that she loves, which is the mild-mannered and kind Ashley Wilkes? How is that? Chapter 1 gives us all of this information. I want to say chapters 1 and 2, but by the time you're finished with chapter 1 and Scarlett's dad, Gerald O'Hara, informs or confirms the Tarleton twins' tea that Ashley Wilkes will be getting engaged to Melanie Hamilton at the barbecue being held the next day, by the time you get to that point, you're asking yourself, well, how is it that Mr. Ashley, why is it that he is just not overwhelmed by the charisma and the huge personality of Scarlett O'Hara? This comes from character development. What Margaret Mitchell does is she crafts a character that is relatable, and then she added a twist to it, because this girl, Scarlett O'Hara, she is not exactly the typical girl. When I think of young ladies that would elicit a lot of male attention from my own life experiences, they all look a certain way. They look a certain way, and you know, they're presenting themselves in a certain way. But Scarlett O'Hara is none of those things. So we are introduced to a person that we see is larger than life, has this full personality. Yet there's something intrinsically missing. And the whole entire book is about finding what's missing. And sometimes in life, we can have the one thing that we are searching for, furiously searching for, we can have that one thing within the palm of our hands and not even know it. How was Margaret Mitchell able to create such a strong character? Now, we know that character development comes from our interactions with other human beings, our interaction with our friends and our family, our coworkers, the people that we meet at the grocery store, the people that we see on television and movies, the music that we listen to. All of those things affect us, and all of those things are the mediums of interaction that we have with other people. So as writers, what we have to do is we have to be able to translate those experiences into a character. And I'm not saying translate everything into that character, but at least giving that person, the fictitious person on paper, giving them the breath of life, being able to breathe our experiences, our interactions and discussions and conversations, being able to breathe that into our character, because that is what's going to make our characters strong, and that is what's going to make our characters relatable, regardless of the fantasy that we present to our readers on paper. We want our characters to be relatable, because the fantasy is that Scarlett O'Hara, an average looking brown haired girl, the fantasy is that she is the star of the county. That's the fantasy. Okay, because we know in real life, no, that would not be happening. But she is, that's the star. And what makes her relatable within that fashion is the fact that she's insecure. And the fact that she doesn't understand what love is. And another central thing about Scarlett, on that note, is that she's a fighter and that she refuses to give up. And she keeps going no matter what. And that is what endears her to the reader. And not only does it endears her to the reader, it keeps the reader excited about moving forward to the next page. It keeps the reader on the edge. That is what good character development is really all about. Infusing life into your character. And even if your character is living in a fantasy world, living a life beyond your dreams or living your dreams, you want to make the character relatable. You make the character relatable by infusing them with the life of a real human being, infusing them with humanity, giving them relatable experiences that your potential readers can say, hey, that's me, or hey, that inspires me, I want that to be me. Because who doesn't want to have that fighter quality about them? Who hasn't overcome certain life experiences that have brought them to their lowest? Who has not been in a position where they have risen above their circumstances and achieved their goals? So I'm hoping that you're understanding why I selected Gone with the Wind as a fantastic way to show you how to become a strong writer. Because the story of Gone with the Wind is a universal story. Margaret Mitchell tells a universal story. Yes, it's a little one-sided and it's colored and, you know, it's skewed here and there. It is from her point of view. However, the commonality of it all is that there is something in it for all of us, because Scarlett O'Hara, the character, is a human being and she's been infused with real life, with human qualities. She has the thread of humanity flowing through her. And that is what makes Scarlett O'Hara one of the strongest characters in modern day literature. So what are the tools, or what are the things that you need to do to develop a strong character? First of all, pull on your experiences with other people, your conversations with people, your discussions, what you see on television. Pull from that. Who is your favorite character? What is your favorite book? Pull how that author created that character and what attracted you to that character. Learn lessons from that when developing your characters. when you are developing the character, make them multidimensional. Make them human. I don't have to know everything about the character you're writing about, but I do need to know 5 central things. I need to know why, where, when, what, and how. I need to know those things. And if you incorporate those things into your character, you will be developing someone, or you will be developing a fictitious person or a fictitious personage that will build a bridge from the page to your reader's heart. And that is going to get them to invest their time into joining you in your imaginative world. So think about that. I want to talk about one more quick thing in character development. I want to talk about one of my, also my favorite television shows. And I understand now that when I watch television, I'm usually watching it not just as a fan or a viewer, I'm also watching it as a writer. And I get it now, but as a young person, I didn't. But that's what I was really into. I'm really into storylines and plots and characters. That's who I am. And that's what I have been getting into since I was a child. You ever heard of a character, or you ever felt love, a love-hate type of thing for a character? Have you ever had a love-hate relationship with a character? I mean, strictly love-hate. You love to hate them, but you're invested in them. And the first time I really experienced that was with the character of J.R. Ewing on the series Dallas. Dallas ran from, I think, 1977, 78 to maybe sometime in the 80s. And one of the characters that the world grew to love and hate at the same time was the character of J.R. Ewing. And what made J.R. Ewing such a fascinating character is that, yes, he was over the top as far as villainy is concerned. He did a lot of stuff that was just absolutely out of the realm of thinking. However, there was a human thread about J.R. Ewing that made him relatable to all of us. What were some of those qualities? Well, the first thing is that he loved his family. He loved his mom. He loved his dad. He had a weird way of loving his siblings. He loved his niece, Lucy, you know. And yes, he was, you know, a little fantastical in some of the things that he did to his family and the ways that he expressed his love. But we knew that that man loved his dad. We knew that that man loved his, that he loved his mother. We knew that he loved his wife. It was just dysfunctional as hell, but he loved his wife tremendously. And the humanity of such a character, you have to really think about character development and what the writers put into creating such a character, because a person, a human being, we as people, we're multifaceted, we're multidimensional. There's many layers to us, and to see a character exhibit that kind of facetness on television was remarkable. And that's why he became J.R. Ewing took on such lifelike proportions or just the way that the world was able to relate to this fictitious character is mind-boggling, but then in a way as a writer, not really, because what the television writers were able to do was they were able to give J.R. not just a fantastical personality. And what I mean by fantastical, what I mean is that the world in which he lived was fantasy, and some of the things that he did was over the top, which is the norm in the world of fiction. Okay, many fictitious characters, because of our imagination, do things that ordinary people would not do, but that's what makes them great. But to be able to craft such a character and then give him aspects of humanity, I might not have been able to relate to being a part of an oil baron family, being wealthy, driving around in a Mercedes coupe. I may not have been able to live in that way, but I can relate to loving my father. I can relate to loving my mother. I can relate to loving my siblings. I can relate to sibling rivalry. You know, I can relate to all of those things, all of those family dynamics. I can relate to all of that. And so can you. And so could the world. You could be living in a hut and relate a little, just a bit, to the world of J.R. Ewing. And the part that you couldn't relate to was entertaining. So when you are developing your characters, you may develop a character that is married, in the process of divorcing her basketball star husband, and she's living in a 20,000 foot mansion, and she has everything that you could ever want in life. All right? I can't relate to that. However, I can relate to feeling alone. I can relate to feeling abused. I can relate to feeling unloved. I can relate to breakups. I can relate to feeling angst. I can relate to being sad. I can relate to overcoming a bad relationship. I can relate to starting over. So when you are building a character, you have to remember that, yes, this is fiction. This is parts of my imagination. Yes, this is a fantasy. It's not real. But there has to be realness about your character, because if it's not, your character doesn't have some aspects of reality, realness within it, then your character, your readers are not going to be able to relate to the character. And on top of that, they're not going to invest in your characters. And what we as writers want the most is we want you to hear our story, read our story, invest in our story, invest in it. Because when you invest in it, you begin to feel it. And you want to know what happens next. You don't want to feel that you wasted your time. No one wants to feel that. And as a writer, you don't want your readers to say to you in an email, text, a Facebook group, an Amazon review. What you don't want is you don't want a reader to say to you, I wasted my time on this. Because then you have to ask yourself. How did that happen? Where did I drop the ball? You want your readers to say, when is the sequel coming out? Where is the sequel? What do you mean there's not going to be a sequel? It can't be. I got to pick up the book and read it again. I miss these characters. I miss these people. They became real to me. That's what you want. That is the reaction that you want. I have reviewed many, 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 many books, hundreds of books, and I'm going to tell you right now, there are characters in books out of all the hundreds and hundreds, the thousands of books that I've read, there are still characters to this day that I have an investment in, and I want to know, when is that author writing the sequel? I still want to know, you know, because that is a testament to good writing. That's a testament to the author being a master at their craft, a master at character development. So in conclusion, what I would like for you to do is to pick up the book, Gone with the Wind. You can download it on Kindle. I believe Goodreads has it. You can read it online. It's however you do so, go ahead and do it. It's a really great investment. It's an investment on so many levels as a writer. I want you as a writer to be objective about the things that you read and to make sure that you're not opening your eyes, that you're opening your heart as well. That is the hallmark of a really great writer. I believe you can do this. I believe that anything you put your mind to, you can accomplish it. You just have to have the tools and the support to get there. And I want to be one of those tools, and hopefully I am inspiring you and supporting you onward in your goals to become a writer. So stay tuned for part 4 of this series, So You Want to Be a Writer. Remember, continue to journal or continue to write something every day. And I don't mean texting. No. Unless you're texting in a way that promotes strong writing skills. Okay? Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Tracy Ricks Foster of The Tracy Ricks Foster Show, and this is the conclusion of part 3 of the series, So You Want to Be a Writer. Stay tuned for part 4. Love you. Have a great day.